Good afternoon. Welcome to Turnout Radio on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Inika Hamilton, back to open up with you about the latest on the dance scene and the heart of what moves us. Happy New Year, everyone. I'm sending you all the love and light as we enter into 2025. Thank you for joining us for today's program. Well, my guest today has been known to say that she studies and teaches dance as culture. Coming up on the broadcast, Toronto-based ballet teacher, dance educator, and researcher, Tanya Berg is in the house and will be joining me to discuss the latest publication of Arts-Based Pedagogies, Integrating Culturally Relevant Creative Processes in K-12 Education. So stay tuned and stay locked in right here to CIUT 89.5 FM. We're going to take a break and be right back with Tanya Berg. Welcome back to Turnout Radio on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Inika Hamilton. My guest today, Tanya Berg, is a Toronto-based ballet teacher, dance educator, and researcher. She holds a PhD in dance studies from York University and is a graduate of Canada's National Ballet School Teacher Training Program. Now, Tanya currently teaches in the Faculty of Education and the Theater, Dance, and Performance Department at York University, as well as in the Faculty of Kinesiology at the University of Toronto. She is the chair of DASI Canada, a chapter of Dance and the Child International. Tanya has presented her research at many international conferences organized by renowned associations of which she remains an active member. Her publications can be found in journals including Research in Dance Education, Journal of Dance Education, University of Toronto Quarterly, and Theatre Research in Canada, as well as in the anthologies Ethical Dilemmas in Dance Education Case Studies on Humanizing Dance Pedagogy and the Oxford Handbook of Ballet Pedagogy, which is forthcoming. Please join me in welcoming to the show Tanya Berg. Tanya, welcome to Turnout Radio. How are you doing?
Hello, Nicole. Happy New Year. I'm doing very well. I'm so thrilled to be here chatting with you today.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you here as well. Happy New Year, Tanya. So wonderful to have you on the show. It's been some time since we had an opportunity to sit down and chat. And in fact, I think the last time I might have seen you would have been at the University of Toronto for a book launch.
Yes, I believe that's true. It was the Oxford Handbook of Hip Hop Studies. We went to that book launch at University of Toronto Heart House in the music room, And we had such a good conversation with so many dancers, educators, teachers in that space that day. I remember very clearly.
Oh, it was a wonderful, wonderful time indeed. And I think we're due, Tammy Berg. We're due.
Absolutely.
So tell me, how have you been doing and how were your holidays?
Well, actually, I'm doing very well. I'm very, very feeling very blessed to come back to another term at the universities. And the holidays were really special this year for a couple of reasons, mostly because I went through, I guess you could say, a bit of a life transition in the fall. My daughter, who is 18 years old, moved all the way out to Vancouver. And as you mentioned, I'm based here in Toronto. So we got to have her back here over the holidays. And it just kind of made things feel a little more, I don't know if it's memorable or if perhaps I just felt like I needed to cherish those moments a little bit more, because I had felt what it felt like to have an empty room where she normally was, and then that room got to be filled up again over the holidays. So first year students back, I'm sure, can relate to that feeling of having a full house again.
Oh, how lovely that must have been. And I've had the pleasure of meeting your family before. So the cherishing, I think, is so precious when you can all come together and celebrate those wonderful moments together. And so she's back off to school then.
Back off to school, yes, which of course is bittersweet, because she was quite excited to get back to her newfound life out there and her program and her friends. And it's nice because we all also get to go back to school and work. My son is 16, so he's back to 11. And so it's a nice transition for all of us, I think, to come back and feel excited again about a new term.
Well, please wish your family Happy New Year for me. I look forward to hopefully seeing them all again soon. And as we enter into the new year, lots to talk about, including your book, which we will discuss in a short bit. But one of the things that I would like to come back to is the quote that I shared at the top of our show, that you've been known to say that you study and teach dance as culture. Talk to us about that quote.
Yes, well, that actually, it did end up in the book after some reflection, because I used to tell people that I had a PhD in dance studies, and they would say, wow, you must be in great shape. You must dance all the time. And in fact, a PhD is a research degree, so I wasn't dancing all that much, if at all. I was teaching. So I started to say, oh, it's akin to cultural studies, but that didn't quite feel right. So I sort of gave this phrase, and dance as culture felt more right to me, because any style of dance, I'm primarily a ballet teacher, and ballet has a culture, it has a history. And so people tend to see ballet maybe as not having that history, but is a European, Eurocentric dance form. And it does have a history. And as we get talking about the book, obviously we've added in many different authors into this book who also teach dance and different forms of dance. And so I began saying that as a way to describe what I did, and then I realized that it actually has so many more layers to it.
Tell me a little bit more about those layers, Tanya. I'd love to explore that more, the layers that you speak of.
So in researching, you find that there is nuance in every form of dance, whether you think of it as a quote-unquote universal form of dance, which doesn't exactly describe any of our of dance forms, or whether you think of it as a quote-unquote world dance style, which we are really trying to get away from differentiating in that way. So I was trying to bring together all different worlds of dance, meaning I was teaching in a dance studio, a private dance studio. I was teaching in a community center, and I was teaching at university. So saying that I was siloing myself into these Western dance forms was not really what I wanted to do. So I encouraged people that were asking me what I was doing to look at dance as culture as opposed to as the sort of silos in which we tend to describe dance forms.
I appreciate the deconstructing of the silos component.
Yes, exactly. And so I suggested that if we took the word dance and we said, I teach dance as culture, but I can also teach art as culture. And so as I began to work with students in the education program, I started to have them see that teaching art in their classrooms was not siloed into these sort of Western ways of thinking about art, but that we were able to bring art into the classroom as a way of accessing the current curriculum in a different way.
Now, I've had the great pleasure of witnessing your approach and the conversations that you're having in classrooms as one of your guest teachers at the University of Toronto. Talk to us a little bit more about the construct of your teaching approach in classroom spaces.
Yes, I do have the pleasure of teaching both a lecture and a studio session with the University of Toronto students. And so I get to, as you said, to use your word, deconstruct some of their notions about dance, the word dance. And so one of the first lessons that we have is that the word dance does not mean the same thing to everybody, so that we must be very careful about using the term Western concert dance when we're referring to things such as a studio practice with tap and jazz and ballet. It would be Western concert dance, and it has been Westernized. And so one of the things I start with is talking about the history of jazz dance, which I know you can appreciate in your field, because we talk about how some of these dancers have gone through their whole lives and never actually realized the roots of jazz dance. And so this is how I start to, as I said, deconstruct their ideas, their preconceived notions of dance. And I just put it straight out there and I say that the idea that ballet has, there's a false hierarchy that is perpetuated, of course, by the inherent white supremacy that happens in these systems that are set, in that ballet somehow has ended up as the top of this hierarchy, which is false, and that it is not the basis for quote unquote all of the dance that these students learn. And so there is a lot of unlearning to be done about some of these notions in the Western education system. I'm very lucky to be working with adults. So I have to say this first off, is that when I do this, I'm speaking to students who are in their university careers. So they have a different sense of being able to read the material that I give them. So I often will start out with the history of jazz, coming from African roots, talking about the rhythms and talking about the actual roots of jazz dance, as opposed to beginning with ballet. And then when I do get into ballet, and this is coming back to the quote, teaching dance as culture, I'm very clear that it came from the high courts, and that is how it has that hierarchy involved with it, and that whiteness and that Eurocentrism. And then it was, of course, disseminated through colonialism. So this hierarchy has been perpetuated for many years, I would say 200 years, stemming from the court of Louis XIV. So that is where we start with my university students, because they are able to do those readings and understand that ballet has a racism problem and that it is going to need to be spoken about as we move forward. You have certainly come and add a wonderful dimension to the course at U of T, and also our good friend Ron Roberts-Smith has come to teach jazz dance, which is one of her specialties as well. And so it's so important that the students hear from people who have so much lived experience and embodied experience. And that is, again, how I found the authors for the book, was looking for diverse voices and looking for different lived experiences that I could bring in as authentic, with their authentic experience. And I feel like I'm not coming at this as, you know, the expert on this book. It's actually a complete group effort. It's a collaboration, and each person and again, the people that I bring into the studio as well, just add so much to the projects.
You're listening to Turnout Radio on CIUT 89.5 FM. Tanya, I'd like to talk more about the recent publication, Arts-Based Pedagogies. The publication explores the transformative potential of creative learning through the implementation of arts integration in K-12 classrooms. The contributors in the book also share real-world experiences of bringing the arts into their curriculum and sharing success stories of using interdisciplinary approaches to build vibrant, student-centered environments. I love that. Which enrich student experience without sacrificing academic rigor. Tell us about the book.
Absolutely. So I started the book by discussing how it came about, and the word I use is authentic necessity planted the seed for this book. I was asked to teach in the Faculty of Education a course on integrating the arts. And my first thought was, do they mean all of the arts? Because I am a ballet teacher, and I think I could probably manage to discuss how to integrate dance, but I am not a school teacher. So I thought, how am I going to do this? And then my next thought was, how are the teacher candidates going to take this class if they've never had any experience in the arts? Certainly when I've taught non-majors, meaning dancers who come to the studio but don't have any formal dance training, there is some fear in that for them. So I knew that I needed to get teachers who had already been there and had lived experience and use them as a resource to help me to teach the class that I personally at that time didn't think I could teach. And I thought, well, if I feel like this and I'm the professor, what do the students feel like when they're asked to teach the arts? So that's how the book came about. And I knew that I wanted to have diverse voices. So I have some wonderful, well, all of them are wonderful contributors with so much vast lived experience in classrooms and integrating the arts, that it was just, I don't want to say it was, nothing's easy. It wasn't easy to write or compile, but it was, the ideas were flowing the entire time.
And the contributing authors, Tanya, integrate Black, Indigenous, and queer experiences. And they're also leading educators in their fields, such as visual art, dance, drama, and music. Can you talk to us about who those contributors are?
Absolutely. So when I first had this idea, I had just recently seen two of the authors, Emily Burgess and Jillian Stambolich. They had created they were consultants for the Toronto District School Board, and they had created a video, a 5-minute video on culturally relevant and responsive pedagogy in the arts. I saw this video and I said, those people know what they are doing with this integration of culturally relevant and responsive pedagogy, which we shorten to CRRP. And it started in the 90s and it's evolved, this theory. But they were actually talking about it in practical ways that classroom teachers can implement that and look at the students who are in front of you and be culturally aware, responsive, and relevant in your work. So Emily and Jill wrote that chapter, but as luck would have it, Emily is a visual arts teacher and Jillian is a music teacher. So they both also wrote chapters on integrating visual arts, and Jillian wrote about integrating music into classrooms. So just for the listeners that are wondering about arts integration, it's not a new concept. Using the arts to access curriculum in a different way has had numerous positive reviews, I suppose we could say, and studies done. But it's also, we are learning, very useful for diverse learners. So luckily, my contributors have had a lot of experience with that. So we have a chapter on dance and a chapter on drama. So the dance chapter was written by Marty Sprague, who's actually in New York, and she has had 5 decades of experience in integrating dance and theater and drama and integrating the arts into social studies, et cetera. And she writes about one of her projects at a high school in New York. We have, at the other end of the educational spectrum, Kevin Brewer is a grade one teacher, or was last year, grade one teacher who integrates drama into his classroom. And Miss Coco Colette Murray is a visiting partner who partners with the TDSB and goes into schools to teach dance. And she has had great successes with bringing dance into schools. And her chapter is extremely, I feel, relevant. And Miss Coco has had some really excellent transitional experiences using the Afro-diasporic dance vernacular in Canadian schools. And I feel like I might be on my last author, who is Artina Vaz, and she writes about contemporary Indigenous art, in part through some stories about her grandson, who is an Indigenous contemporary artist. And I don't want to give away too much, but her stories really resonate because the young boy that he was struggling in the Western school system, and he was sort of getting away from his art. And then she tells a lovely story of how he was re-inspired in art. So they all bring very diverse perspectives, and the voices just resonate because there's so many different experiences that they bring and put into their writing.
And though written in a Canadian context, Tanya, core concepts from the text can be applied internationally. Is this book for teachers and students alike?
Absolutely. So this really central to, I suppose, the collaboration with so many different teachers and artists. I really wanted it to be transferable to any country. So I will be bringing copies of this book to Malaysia, actually, in the summertime. I have an interested group of people at a university there. And obviously, the United States, it will transfer as well. And I got lots of feedback from many professors in Canada and the US about how to make the curriculum transfer. I always say, you have a 9-year-old person in front of you. That 9-year-old person doesn't need to have the same curricular strand in one province as they have in another province. It's a 9-year-old person. So humanizing that pedagogy and saying, we're looking at people in classrooms and we can use material. It doesn't matter if it exactly fits with the curriculum in your state or in your province or in your country, but it is about the children. They're all children. It's K to 12. So they are all able to access knowledge in different ways. And that was the bottom line, was that it's transferable.
The humanizing pedagogy resonates with me.
Yes, for sure. And that's the that was the impetus for starting with the culturally relevant and responsive pedagogy chapter. It's chapter two. It's right off the bat because this is such a central pedagogical approach going forward, looking at our diverse classrooms, and not only diverse in terms of culture or background, but also diverse in terms of learning styles. Not everybody learns sitting in that desk with a pencil and a paper. So that is where the arts can really have their biggest impact, is that we can perhaps reach students who maybe wouldn't have excelled at that concept if it were taught in a traditional way, a traditional colonial school system way. So being in the arts and bringing in opportunities for the students to share their own backgrounds, their own life, lived experiences and life experience is something that is central to moving forward in our classrooms.
Now, merging theory and practice was important to you. Can you talk to us about why?
Yes, absolutely. So I got this question many times as I was developing this book. Is it theoretical or is it practical? And for me, it just seemed like everything that is practical is theoretical and everything that is theoretical is practical. And I think it comes from the embodiment of dance. So I come at everything from an embodied perspective. And so to separate this idea that there is theory about teaching, and then there is the teaching, and then there is embodiment, which we do in a studio or a gym. So it was very central to the project that we realized that every type of learning is embodied. And so the arts facilitate that. The other thing that I will add is that when I teach this work to teacher candidates, they often come in quite worried that they are not going to have a certain level of art experience. And what is really, coming back to your point about humanizing the pedagogy, what is really central to this work is that you do not have to be an expert. You're simply facilitating learning and you are facilitating the arts. So you do not need to be an expert in dance or in visual arts or in drama or in music. You can facilitate learning through the arts without being a quote unquote expert.
More with Tanya Berg coming up after this. Coming up on Friday, January 31st, the Institute for Dance Studies and Art House invite you to the 2025 keynote event, Arts-Based Pedagogies Book Launch, with presentations from today's guest and editor, Dr. Tanya Berg, and contributing publication author, artist, scholar, dance educator, and cultural arts programmer, Colette Coco Murray. At the event, attendees will have the opportunity to purchase a copy of the publication for a special limited time 20% discount offer. The free event will run from 1 to 3 p.m. EST and will take place in the Hart House Music Room at 7 Hart House Circle in Toronto, followed by a Q&A and social. To learn more, visit harthouse.ca. Ahead of the event, here's what Colette Coco Murray shares from her contributions to Chapter 3 of the publication entitled Integrating Anti-Racist Collaboration with African Diasporic Teaching Dance Artists.
The integration of creative epistemologies from diverse cultures and communities across African and Caribbean regions into educational frameworks in Canadian primary schools is burgeoning with the idea of cultural art educators guest teaching in Canadian schools today. My conscientious approach is an intentional response to educating diverse student communities to see the contributions and cultural dance education and value its content on the same level as Euro-Western dance styles. My graduate research identified that anti-Black racism pervades cultural arts curricula in Ontario, and that improving relationships between Black teaching artists and Canadian schools is a necessary part of the arts integration process.
That was Colette Coco Murray. Coming up next, more with Tanya Berg. Tanya, just before the break, you had shared that every type of learning is embodied. Explore that for me.
Absolutely. So as we find in many schools, we find that the sit, watch, repeat, listen doesn't reach all of our learners. And so as we educate students, we teach them to sit still, and observe. And so that doesn't always resonate with every student. And the one thing that is at the core of the arts is that there is no mind-body division. We're not just cognitively educating your brain, then we're going to go take you into a gym and educate your body. But it is that mind-body connection that facilitates this learning. And so with creativity, and that is one of the chapters in the book talks about creativity. Teachers often feel that they are not creative and there's a block to that creativity, and they feel like, I don't think I can be as creative as I need to be. But it isn't the grand, what we call like the big C creativity, the life-changing or society-altering creativity that needs to be there. It's the everyday creativity and problem-solving that the students will get out of using the arts, and so, or teachers use the arts, facilitating learning in the arts to integrate that into their curriculum. So the idea of embodiment is something very, very close to our hearts as dancers, but it's something that perhaps your local math teacher might not feel that their subject is embodied, but of course it is. And so I had some wonderful examples of arts integration in the math classroom, whether it be music or dance or drama, from many of these from these teachers. So the idea that the mind and body are separate is something we really need to get away from, and we need to stop educating the students out of their creative capacities and instead realize that the arts are a way into that curriculum for many students.
When you consider embodiment and what you had shared with regards to every type of learning being embodied, are there particular practices that you have implemented into your approach to teaching and your creation practices outside of the classroom?
Yes, yeah, for sure. And one of them, and I think that this will resonate with many, not only artists, but teachers and even students, is collaboration. So once you are in a group, whether it's as a student or as a teacher, or a teacher with your students, the way in which we interact, our social interaction, our primary experiences that happen when we are first expressing ideas, creativity, learning with the people around us. So those initial experiences tend to foster more nuanced, more multidimensional, because you have more voices. So for me, collaboration, as you can tell by my by the book that is not my book, it is the book actually of the authors. It is a collaboration. I was lucky enough to see the project in its entirety and then have these amazing collaborators. So for me, I think the answer to your question is absolutely communication with peers, colleagues, students, my children, and that is definitely one way in which I embody the material that I am producing.
And it definitely allows for considerations, perspectives, understandings, and ways of being, ways of understanding to come to the table and into the conversation when that collaboration occurs.
Absolutely. And the lived experience that someone brings to that conversation cannot be understated, because we all have such varying perspectives. And so to see or to hear from another person, to see their perspective, hear what they have to say, it just enriches the experience, the creative experience.
Yes, indeed. Well, Tanya, we are coming to a close of our interview today, but I do want to take some time to make mention of the book launch.
Absolutely. So the launch is co-hosted by the Institute for Dance Studies at the University of Toronto, led by Dr. Seika Boy. And it is co-hosted with Heart House, and it will be in the music room on January 31st, as you mentioned. And there are links and QR codes to get there, but perhaps the easiest would be to go to the Heart House website, and there will be an events page, and they will have a registration there for the event. And one of my authors who we were discussing earlier, Colette Murray, Miss Coco from the Coco Collective, will be here, and we will do some West African dancing as well to round out the book launch. I'm thrilled to say that six of the authors will be attending. We will have faces to names, and we will be able to ask them questions, and they will be able to give lived experience in the first person.
Excellent, Tanya. And the launch can again be found at hearthouse.ca. For our audience members, that's hearthouse.ca. And when there, folks can do a search for Arts-Based Pedagogies Book Launch. We'll also have that link available at turnoutradio.com following the broadcast. Tanya, it has been such a pleasure to have you on the show today. Thank you for sitting down with me.
Thank you so much, Nicole. It was such a pleasure.
Truly, truly a pleasure. And I'm looking forward to not only seeing you at the launch, but having more opportunities to sit down with you in 2025. Thanks again, Tanya.
Much appreciated. Thank you, Nicole.
Today, you've been listening to the sounds of Cannonball Adderley with Autumn Leaves and John Coltrane with Blue Train. Thank you. Welcome back to Turnout Radio on CIUT 89.5 FM. That was Tanya Berg here in the house with me today. It's so great to be in conversation with her. Now, folks, if you missed the top of the interview, you can catch it again after this broadcast, coming soon to turnoutradio.com, CIUT.FM, and via some of your favorite podcast platforms. And we also invite you to stay connected with us. We'd love to hear from you. Email us at turnoutradio@ciut.fm to reach our production team, and visit our website to access and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Now, in case you missed our previous announcement, we have some news for you. Turnout Radio will soon be airing on Saturday mornings. Yes, it's true. Commencing January 18th, we invite you to tune in for our weekly broadcasts now on Saturdays at 8 a.m. EST. This will be a move from this regular Wednesday time slot on CIUT. Following today's episode, be sure to set your clocks and join us for our next episode and our first ever Saturday morning show, again on January 18th. Visit turnoutradio.com for a statement from CIUT station management regarding our new year news and our new year move. To you, our fabulous Wednesday audience members, thank you for the love and for tuning in every week during this hour. We look forward to having you join us now on Saturday mornings, again commencing January 18th. This brings us to a close of today's program. Join us again next week for more of Turnout Radio right here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Nicole Inica Hamilton. I hope your week finds you turning out to dance. Thank you.
Thank you.